and welcome to this week's episode of Strange Pathways. I am your host, Scott Mort. I'm having a good week. I hope you're having a great week as well. Boy, if you will allow me just a few moments of pride, I would really appreciate it. My lovely wife, Ariana, decided to, after many years, to return to college. She is studying for her degree in psychology. She already has her associate. She's going out for her bachelor's, then her doctorates. And, you know, it's been a slog. It's been a slog to get back. Even getting citizenship from my wife, who hails from the Bahamas. But that was a slog as well. But this, getting into college, has been a wonderful thing because the grades for my wife's first semester of college have come back 4.0 all the way. I am so, so proud of her, and I congratulate her, but I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised at all. Ariana is an amazing woman who is capable of really anything she puts her mind to. I'm envious of her in that way. Thank you for indulging me. On to this week's tales. Ania Lasarza had been born in Italy, but eventually found his way to Canada. At the age of 23, Lasarza found himself in the employ of a mining operation. On the fateful evening of July 2nd, 1954, Lasarza was working, and he was disrupted by an extraordinary celestial event. As the clock neared 5 p.m., he noticed a peculiar sight in the northern sky while immersed in his duties. A mysterious object, defying the conventional speed of aircraft at that time, descended towards the Earth. Lasarza initially perceived it as maybe a potential crash, but then the object defied expectations by sharply braking and hovering not far from Lasarza's location. This craft resembled the iconic flying saucers that gained notoriety post-World War II. It boasted a diameter of about 8 meters. Its features included windows or portholes on the side, a distinctive antenna on the top, and a visible landing gear extending from the bottom. Lasarza, the mesmerized witness, stood with his mouth agape, captivated by this otherworldly spectacle. Little did he anticipate that the unfolding events would etch an indelible mark on his memory. From the bowels of the UFO emerged three colossal and very inhuman entities, each towering at approximately 4 meters in height. Their surreal appearance featured a blue-green hue, faces with indescribable colors, and their bodies emitted an eerie glow. Cyclopean. They had one singular eye on their forehead, but these beings possessed 6 arms, hairy legs, and claw crab-like appendages instead of conventional hands. Adding to their unsettling appearance were the 2 antennae, or protrusions resembling ears. Their resemblance to crabs and other insects was uncanny. As the leader approached Lasarza, the encounter escalated into the realms of fright previously unimaginable. Despite the initial shock, Lasarza instinctively began to retreat. However, a sudden and inexplicable psychic shock came over him, freezing him in place. In this paralyzed state, the entity communicated with him mentally, requesting an unspecified task. Now, whether Lasarza remembered what the task was, forgot, or was just too horrified to tell anyone, He said to the entity, I would rather die. Lasarza was terrified to the core. He staunchly refused, proclaiming his preference for death over compliance. And then, overwhelmed by fear, he fainted. When he regained consciousness, the hovering UFO and its monstrous occupants had vanished, leaving only impressions on the ground. This had been no hallucination. He hadn't fallen asleep, fainted, and imagined the entire incident. No, physical imprints had been left behind by the craft. Promptly, Lasarza reported the surreal incident not only to his superiors at the Mining Corporation, but also to the Canadian RCAF Air Force. However, this tale takes an unexpected turn. Lasarza's account found its way into the labyrinth of Project Blue Book, a government-led investigation into unidentified flying objects. As was customary with such reports in the sensationalized 1950s, the media descended upon the story like vultures, distorting facts, attributing statements to Lasarza that he never uttered. Among the misleading claims was the assertion that UFOs hailed from Mars. This was, of course, a lie that further fueled the public's imagination. On July 9, 1954, official recordings were conducted with the reporters who had interviewed Lasarza. However, these records, vital for a comprehensive understanding of the incident, mysteriously vanished, or maybe they were intentionally destroyed over time. Intriguingly, Lasarza never underwent hypnosis, a tool often employed to unravel subconscious memories and unveil the obscure details of such extraordinary encounters, whether it be for better or worse. Some individuals involved in the investigation speculated that the unearthly beings harbored intentions of delivering warning messages about life on Earth, a narrative consistent with certain historical UFO encounters. However, to this day, such speculations remain unconfirmed, veiled in the mysteries of that July night. In reconstructing this extraordinary tale, one must navigate through the layers of sensationalism, misinterpretations, and missing pieces. Lasarza's encounter with the unknown not only captivates the imagination, but also raises enduring questions about the nature of reality, the limits of human perception, and the persistent enigma surrounding unidentified flying objects. If you could travel back in time and meet Lee Parrish in 1977, I imagine you'd find him somewhat interesting. Lee Parrish is a 19-year-old high school student at the time, and he's employed by his family's business, Parrish Supply. He serves as a laborer, a truck driver, and stands at a sturdy 6 foot. You'll find that Lee has a polite demeanor, is reserved, and will strike you as an individual of average intelligence and practical sensibilities. Despite a neat appearance and casual attire, Gene displays genuine concerns about what happened to him the night of January 27, 1977. Having left his friend Kathy Johnson's house just before 1 a.m. after watching a television program, Lee, en route to his home, fed Kathy's dog, hopped into his 1970s Jeepster with the V6 engine, and embarked on what should have been a routine 7-minute journey. Despite the cold weather and partly cloudy conditions with snow on the ground, the roads were clear. Approximately 4 miles short of reaching US 42 on Highway 329, Lee observed an unusual object. Hovering just above the tree line, the object was situated between 100 and 220 feet off the road at an altitude of 100 to 150 feet. Described as a rectangular shape measuring about 10 feet in height and 40 feet in length, the craft exhibited a brilliant color resembling the setting sun. Lee, compelled to gaze at it, was unable to sustain eye contact due to its intense brightness. Overwhelmed with fear, he wanted to leave the area, but found himself unable to, even losing awareness of how his car remained on the road. Around 15 seconds into the sighting, his car radio failed. As Lee continued to observe the fire-collared UFO, it hovered until it was directly overhead, and then abruptly accelerated away to the northwest at speeds resembling a jet. Strikingly, this entire encounter occurred in silence. Upon arriving home, Lee's mother noticed something amiss with his eyes. They were entirely bloodshot. Experiencing pain, albeit to a lesser degree later that evening, Lee realized that the time was 1:45 a.m., indicating a 45-minute duration for a 7-minute trip from Kathy's house. His mother and girlfriend corroborated his arrival and departure times. On January 27, 1977, investigator Don Elkins received a call from Larry Allison, a hypnotist familiar with UFO-related cases. Mrs. Parrish had contacted Larry, concerned about her son's unusual experience. Now, despite the initial anxiety about hypnosis, Lee agreed to a session conducted by Larry, expressing a strong desire to uncover the events during the missing time. Under hypnosis, Lee recounted a sequence of events that unfolded after leaving Kathy's house. Initially mistaking the rectangular UFO for fire, he quickly grew frightened, unable to avert his gaze as it hovered directly overhead. His memory became hazy during this period, leaving uncertainty about whether the craft had moved over the road or if the car had entered its vicinity. Abruptly, Lee's surroundings changed. He found himself in a circular all-white room within the UFO, around 20 feet in diameter with self-luminous walls. Three non-human entities stood before him, a tall black one, a scared red one, and a white one that seemed to be the leader. Under hypnosis, Lee recounted the following. Before him stood three objects. He felt that these objects were sentient beings, but they were not human. The black one, the red one, and the white one. The black one stood as high as the ceiling, roughly the shape of an army silhouette target, jug-shaped, and with a relatively small head. It had a flat bottom and one arm, a handless, one-jointed appendage. This arm was rough-skinned. The rest of the entity, rough in patches, smooth in patches. The head was featureless. It moved slowly to Lee and touched him on the left side and back, hurting him quite a bit and terrifying him. Throughout the regression, Lee kept saying, "No, no, not the black one." The sensation of the black one touching him was somehow cold and burning at the same time. Now the red one was on his right. It was about Lee's size, maybe a little smaller. It was rectangular in shape, reminded Lee of a Coke machine. It also had one arm, but this one, unjointed and handless. Lee felt that the red one was scared, but it came over slowly. It touched him on the shoulder and the right temple, above the ear, and on the hairline. It felt like a needle and stung briefly, but it did not scare Lee, and it didn't hurt long. This time, Lee felt very, very cold, and the whole craft seemed to be rocking like a boat on water. The white one was about 6 feet tall, Lee's height. It sat in the middle of the room, watching. Solid, blocky body, a head square on the sides, flat on the front. The profile, the head sloped towards the body at a 45-degree angle. It had no features. The whole being glowed, Now, this entity had arms, but it did not use them. Lee knew this was their leader. The red one backed up after it had touched Lee, went together with the white one. It seemed to merge with it, but Lee admitted it could have went behind it. The red one had done its job. The white one started making a sound, which Lee described as a person using a toothbrush or sandpaper, a rhythmic scraping sound. The black one was slowly backing up at this point. Lee, who had been quite cold, found that he was now very, very warm. The white one moved to the black one and either merged with it or went behind it, leaving only the frightening 20-foot-tall black entity there with Lee. Then the black one simply disappeared, and Lee was alone in the white room. And he subsequently found himself back in the Jeepster without any transition. Notably, the UFO allegedly caught the Jeep as if in a trap, suspending it without physically placing it on the ship or the ground. Lee's cigarette also vanished during the process, and the Jeep's electrical system malfunctioned the day after the sighting. Under hypnosis, Lee suggested that the beings were interested in examining his chemical makeup and conducting a physical checkup, speculating that they might contact him again. The method of transport involved the red ship catching the Jeep as it went underneath, suspending it with an unknown force. Lee felt that the entities had control over him and the Jeep during the encounter. Intriguingly, a Dr. Burton Monroe, a zoology consultant, reported a separate UFO sighting by a neighbor in Anchorage, Kentucky around the same time. Now, Lee did have a prior interest in UFOs and psychic phenomena. He had even experienced peculiar occurrences, such as willing a light to turn on. Despite having seen UFOs before, he felt that this particular incident targeted him specifically, perhaps because he was alone that Wednesday night. Lee's mother had also encountered UFOs, adding a complexity to the family's experiences in the realm of unidentified aerial phenomena. There are some cases that whenever I am working on them, narrating them, they seem really, really out there. Really quite difficult to believe. I do try my best to stay open-minded because who am I to say that these events haven't happened? I'm just reporting on them. They're things I find fascinating. And then I throw them out to you, the listener. Last week, I had one of those cases. It was the case of a man who had reported to New Fork in 2007 about being abducted and then being rescued by another group of aliens. That was the fascinating part to me. He's abducted by Greys, and another group of aliens busts in and rescues him. But the really, not that that part is believable. I get it. That part is hard to believe. But it may have been this man's reality, and we deserve to believe him until we have proof otherwise. The part that got really, really out there was that the man was rescued by dog creatures. Upright walking, 6-7 foot tall dogs, tall and muscular. I really didn't think that this story had any legs. I thought this is going to be the last time that I ever talk about this. This is a one-off. But then, surprise, surprise, surprise. Later that night, I was over on 4chan browsing X. It's kind of a harsh place. I don't recommend it for the faint of heart. But I find an interesting post. This post is on X. It's the paranormal boards on 4chan. And the title of this post, I picked up a strange radio broadcast. For those interesting, it is post number 366-50618. The post goes as follows. I'm an amateur ham radio operator here in northern Wyoming, and I play around in the over 1 gigahertz range. I came across some weird beeps and squelches in the 1.685 gigahertz range, so I have been listening in case it's a trucker or another amateur. I like talking over the radio on civilian channels, but after a few days of monitoring, I got a female voice. It sounds like a temporary number station or something, but I chopped the recording up into a 5-minute video with subtitles. The transmission is not very long, but it seems to contain a lot of data, if I had to guess. Now, my dear listener, I'm going to play the audio of what Anonymous on 4chan listened to now. Please keep in mind, it is a little hard to hear. If you would rather skip over this, please jump ahead 5 minutes. Here is Anonymous's audio.
Broadcast. Break. Call sign. Vada. Break. 1.6877 repeating gigahertz. Break. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my victorious right hand. Do not be afraid, for I bring you good tidings of great joy, which will be to all people. Do not be afraid. We are peaceful. 45. 61, 72, 74, 68, 20, 54, 69, 6 Delta, 65, 0 Alpha, break. 31, 38, 30, 30, 20, 55, 64, 42, 20, 2 Delta, 37, break. 44, 65, 62, 65, 6 Delta, 62, 65, 72, 20, 32, 32, 20, 32, 30, 32, 32, break. 4, Charlie, 61, 74, 69, 74, 75, 64, 65, 20, 34, 37, break. 4, Charlie, 6 Foxtrot, 6 Echo, 67, 69, 74, 75, 64, 65, 20, 4 Echo, 65, 67, 61, 74, 69, 76, 65, 20, 31, 31, 31, break. 59, 6 Foxtrot, 75, 20, 6 Bravo, 6 Echo, 6 Foxtrot, 77, 20, 75, 72, 0 Alpha, 57, 65, 20, 6 Bravo, 6 Echo, 6 Foxtrot, 77, 20, 79, 6 Foxtrot, 75, 0 Alpha, break. 57, 65, 20, 61, 72, 65, 20, 60, 69, 6 Bravo, 65, 20, 79, 6 Foxtrot, 75, 2 Echo, 20, 57, 65, 20, 60, 69, 76, 65, 64, 20, 61, 6 Delta, 6 Foxtrot, 6 Echo, 67, 20, 79, 6 Foxtrot, 75. Brake. 45. 6 delta. 62. 72. 61. 62. 65. 20. 75. 72. 20. 66. 6 foxtrot. 72. 20. 77. 65. 20. 6 delta. 65. 61. 6 echo. 20. 6 echo. 6 foxtrot. 20. 68. 61. 72. 6 delta. Break. 57, 65, 20, 61, 72, 65, 20, 6 Charlie, 69, 6 Bravo, 65, 20, 79, 6 Foxtrot, 75, 20, 62, 75, 74, 20, 77, 69, 74, 68, 20, 66, 75, 72, break. 57, 65, 20, 61, 72, 65, 20, 6 Charlie, 69, 6 Bravo, 65, 20, 79, 6 Foxtrot, 75, 20, 62, 75, 74, 20, 62, 61, 6 Echo, 69, 6 Echo, 65, 72, 20, 61, 6 Charlie, 72, 6 Foxtrot, break. 57, 65, 20, 6 Charlie, 6 Foxtrot, 76, 65, 20, 79, 6 Foxtrot, 75, break. 50, 6 Charlie, 65, 61, 72, 65, 20, 6 Charlie, 6 Foxtrot, 76, 65, 20, 75, 72. Break.
Lots of theories start flying. One person on 4chan believes that the 1.3 to 1.6 gigahertz range is reserved for space-Earth communication, satellites and what have you. But then, something really, really, truly fascinating happens. One 4chan user says, the numbers are a hexadecimal code. And it's translated to Earth time break. 1800 UTC minus 7 break. December 23rd, 2023 break. Latitude 47 break. Longitude negative 111 break. You know us break. We know you break. We are like you break. We lived among you. Break. Embrace us, for we mean no harm. Break. We are like you, but with fur. Break. We are like you, but canines also. Break. We love you. Break. Please love us. Break. The we lived among you. That kind of stuck in my head. And so I did some digging, and I found out about kynocephaly. These are the dog-headed people of antiquity. Now, in the 5th century BC, the Greek physician Clesias, in his work Indica, wrote a detailed report on the existence of kynocephaly in India. The Greek traveler Megasthenes claimed to know about dog-headed people in India who lived in the mountains. They communicated through barking. They wore the skins of wild animals and lived by hunting. Claudius Aelianus, he mentioned the dog-headed tribes in India. And he also wrote about them having a human shape but clothed in the skins of beasts. He also added that they have no speech. They howled to communicate. They were capable of understanding the Indian language. Herodotus reports that ancient Libyans had creatures inhabit the east of their lands. He also reported headless men. The headless men got to me as well because, You know, there are entities like Mothman who don't seem to have a head per se. Their eyes are like set in their chest. We get into a little bit more modern stuff. There's a description of two saints, Arrakis and Igani. They had dog's heads. The Saint Augustine of Hippo mentioned the kynocephaly in the City of God. If you happen to go through that, it is Book 16, Chapter 8. He discussed whether these beings were the descendants of Adam. It goes on, in the Eastern Orthodox Church, certain icons identify Saint Christopher with the head of a dog. Explorer Ibn Battuta encountered what he described as dog-mouth people on his journey. Ibn Battuta, these are his exact words. 15 days after leaving Sunaredwan, we reached the country of the Barakanakar, whose mouths are like those of dogs. This tribe is a rabble, professing neither the religion of the Hindus nor any other. They live in reed huts roofed with grasses on the seashore and have abundant banana, areca, and beetle trees. Their men are shaped like ourselves, except that their mouths are shaped like those of dogs. This is not the case with their women folk, however, who are endowed with a surpassing beauty. Over and over and over, more and more and more explorers in antiquity mention these dog-headed people. Are they returning on the 23rd? I doubt it. I'm 50 years old now, and I've seen so many cases where this is happening on this date, this is happening on this date, this is happening on this date, and they have, without exception, all come to no fruition whatsoever. Maybe this time will be different. Probably not. But it did get me thinking. There are many theories about UFOs. Visitors from another galaxy, another world. Dimensional travelers. Spirits disguising themselves as things we would understand. Time travelers from our future. But one that I have never considered. Maybe they are time travelers, but not from our future. Maybe these entities are time travelers from our distant past. The remnants of a civilization long gone, be it by destruction or just the degradation of their society. Coming forward, trying to figure out where they went wrong. Trying desperately, hurtling through time to find any clue that they can take back to save their society. And the terrifying thing about that is, there is a chance that if these time travelers from the past succeed and save their society, their civilization, that humanity would blink out in a puff of smoke. Thank you for joining us once again here this week on Strange Pathways. If you are having mental health trouble dealing with a paranormal incident, please reach out to the Opus Network at www.opusnetwork.org. Our Twitter, Pathways Strange. TikTok, the same. Strange Pathways Podcast. Our Instagram, Strange Pathways Podcast. Our Facebook is going to have a few images up of the cases we talked about today. If you'd like to contact me, you can do so at strangepathwaysmail@gmail.com. head on over to YouTube. Number one, I'd love it if you would comment, like, subscribe to our YouTube channel, get those numbers up. But also on YouTube, this week we have another fantastic episode of The Cult of SMMI. Terrifying in a completely different way, but it rattles me. It rattles me hearing Mike's story about how this cult slowly took over his family. Thank you once again for joining us here on Strange Pathways. Take care of yourselves and each other.